Accessing library computer data.
And to make sure history never forgets the name Enterprise.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. We're up to Star Trek 9. I stopped giving them numbers at this point, but I'm going to keep going with it. Star Trek 9 Insurrection, the third of the TNG movies. Joined by Clay. Clay, how are you doing?
I'm good. I was wondering how much erotic fan fiction was spawned off of this movie, based entirely off that two-second segment where they talk about their boobs getting firm.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a lot of people who are like, I'm sorry, what?
And they have the...
I would like to expand on that.
They have the tub scene, which is also very erotic. Yeah. So there's a whole,
it's a very
whole...
sexy Star Trek movie. This is arguably the sexiest Star Trek movie so far.
Yeah, probably. And it's a very unsexy movie, but I think we're going to be getting into that. But it's sexy at the same time. This was Star Trek Insurrection, directed by Jonathan Frakes, old Commander Riker. Screenplay goes to Michael Piller. It aired came out on December 11th, 1998. And it cost $58 million to produce. This is the episode where... What happens in this one? The crew of USS Enterprise E rebels against Starfleet after they discover a conspiracy with a species known as the Sona to steal the peaceful Baku's planet for its rejuvenating properties. We're going to get into it. I'm going to play an audio clip. Me and Clay are going to come back, and we're going to break down Star Trek Insurrection.
We've always known that to survive, we had to remain apart. Hasn't been easy. Many of the young people want to know more about the offland. They're attracted to stories of a faster pace of life.
Most of my people who live that fast a life would sell their souls to slow it down.
But not you.
There are days.
You don't live up to your reputation as an offlander, Picard.
Well, in defense of offlanders, there are many more people like me.
Who wouldn't be tempted by the promise of perpetual youth? I don't think so.
You give me more credit than I deserve. Well, of course, I'm tempted. Who wouldn't be? But some of the darkest chapters in the history of my world involved the forced relocation of a small group of people to satisfy the demands of a large one. I'd hoped that we had learned from our mistakes, but... seems that some of us haven't.
All right, Clay. So, the general takeaway from this movie that every review seems to have is that this was a regular show episode stretched out into a movie, and I think that's the easy criticism of the movie. At the same time, I think it's probably accurate. Like, enough people are saying this, and I sort of agree with it that I feel that way, and I think that my general takeaway from this whole movie is that it is the smallest Star Trek movie. Like, there's so little that happens in this, and everything is so low stakes, and, like, the whole thing just feels really dull, and it feels very much like a hangout with the crew kind of jocular thing going on here. And I think that's maybe the big problem with it, is just how... small it is. And if you're going to take a franchise like Star Trek, all the movies previous to this have been about big events, and they've been about big sort of items, and a lot of the movies don't work, some of them do work, but at least they're sort of about something that makes you feel like this was a reason to be a movie. And I don't get any of that from Insurrection. So what's your general starting point about where you want to take this conversation?
Well, excuse me, I actually really enjoyed this movie, and I think I think it's a time thing for me, because I know what you're saying. I 100% agree with you. I feel like if I had seen this movie at the time, I probably would have come out and felt very underwhelmed by it. And it does feel like an episode of the series. I mean, I feel like where Generations also felt like an episode of the series to its detriment, I feel like this is an episode of the series to its strength.
Sure.
And what I mean by time is, I think the fact that this isn't, I'm not watching this as a summer tentpole action sci-fi movie the way the other ones were presented. I'm just watching it in the same manner I would watch any of the other episodes of the show. It kind of lowers the bar for how big it needs to be, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yep.
I feel like this movie isn't really trying too hard. I think it does. I think it tries a little bit too hard at the end. The climax is a little bit. It just kind of turns into a stock action thing where they got to, you know, stop a ticking clock and all that kind of garbage.
Right. But, yep.
Aside from that, you know, I was enjoying it. I think the villain is probably one of the best Star Trek movie villains. Just because, if only because he's not a ripoff of Khan and he's not a Klingon. And he has a very clear motivation and a thing that he's after. I mean, when they get into his backstory, it's kind of like, all right, well, I don't know if him being exiled because he's a prick is enough,
right?
Really justifies the level of hatred he has for these people now. But yeah, I don't know. I just thought I thought it was good. I mean, it continues the movie themes of the subtext being, about aging and time.
How many? I mean, I just honestly realized, like, I wouldn't have thought about this movie as being about that. But how many of the Star Trek movies are about aging? It's like
all of them.
It's basically all of them. Yeah. It's really kind of crazy, and like time is a big thing. Like, it's pointless in this movie, but they have the ability to slow down time, and time is very important to all the Star Trek movies as well. There's like a lot going on with time and age. I mean, it links to aging, but. Yeah, it's a weird theme to continue so far into it. I just feel I don't really think that the TNG movies are pulling it off all that particularly well. But I think I interrupted you as you were talking about the pacing and everything that you sort of enjoyed.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, I kind of covered it, but to go off of what you were saying just then, I think one of the reasons that the TNG movies don't cover it as well is because they're not old enough.
Yeah.
Although I do have to say, Data is looking old in this movie.
He's a little punchy.
Yeah. I remember, I'm waiting for Nemesis because I very clearly remember Data looking pretty old in Nemesis, but he's starting to, the makeup is not hiding it as much as it used to.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the stakes are really low. I mean, I feel like I'm being a little bit hypocritical of the way that I judged a lot of the episodes of the show, because I would get on the show for stakes being so low generally.
Yeah.
But I think the stakes are low. I think in the movie, this movie, the stakes are low, but they are clear. And,
are they? I have kind of a,
yeah, I guess I know what you mean. Yeah,
I think the more that I think about, this is a movie that kind of has a plot that seems okay while you're watching it, but the more that you think about it, I don't really know if it makes a lot of sense once it's all done. Yeah. Because in your opinion, is Starfleet aware of what's going on this planet? Or is it just this admiral who's trying to do something?
I honestly don't know. That was one thing. The one thing that I really noted. Well, I noted it before they had a scene where they tried to explain everything. But my one big plot question was, it seemed to continue Star Trek's theme of not really having a good sense of how big planets are. Because only thing I could think of was, there's only 600 people on this planet. Why do they need to displace this entire 600 people?
Yes.
When there's an entire planet worth that you could inhabit to do whatever you're going to do. But then they have that scene where they're like, well, they're mining the energy out of the rings, and once they do that, the planet's going to be uninhabitable. And then even at some point, Picard's like, well, can't you just like hang out for a while? And they were like, well, no, because it's not going to affect these guys because their skin's weird or something.
I think the movie basically says that they're trying to like commoditize the stuff, and like they're trying to sort of sell it, and that will kill the planet eventually. But I mean, I sort of agree that, like, to me, the stakes are so small. The stakes being so small, and the fact that there's only 600 Baku on the planet, brings up this weird ethical problem where I don't feel like people are wrong to tell them to move so that they can use it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's not like it's a huge society. The amount of good that this planet's radiation is going to do for seemingly a whole bunch of people seems to outweigh the fact that 600 people live there currently.
That's true. Yeah. And also, I mean, they're not even, as they say, they're not even native to the planet.
Right.
So.
And that
it's not like,
that's an easy way to get around the prime directive. You know, I think that's why they do it, just to get around that. I don't know why else they would have thrown that in there.
Yeah. There is a, when you start getting into that stuff, it doesn't make a lot of sense. Cause it's like, well, the only reason that you're not, I guess I can't really figure out why Picard is so against moving them, because if you move them, then they're all just going to age normally and they're just going to die.
Yeah.
But since they're staying, they're going to live forever or whatever. And they're not from there. And it is kind of,
It ties into the, yeah. I mean, do you think that because I think it's very unclear whether or not, I think the movie tries to go both ways about whether or not Starfleet knows what's going on, right? They kind of hint that they are, because the General Doherty or whatever says that, you know, this is, I'm acting on the orders of Starfleet Command, but he's also very concerned that the Enterprise is going to go back and notify Starfleet about this. Like he has the Sona attack the Enterprise to try to destroy it. So the stakes of the insurrection to me feels limited, because it doesn't even feel to me as the movie goes on that the crew are really standing against Starfleet. It feels like they're just standing against the Sona and this one admiral guy, who the admiral has his own problems, because I think the character suffers by the fact that it's unclear whether or not he believes this is a good idea or a bad idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's a problem with the, in general, the movie feels to me that kind of a way. Like it's not that they're not trying, but it almost feels like there's not a lot of like inspiration going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It seemed like they were trying to play the Federation. Picard makes a lot of allusions to similar instances like this through history that always end up bad. And it seems like they were trying to play the Federation more like they would, you know, like the United States government when it came to the American Indians or something that, where they seemed like they thought they were doing something for the benefit of the country, but they were doing it at the cost of a group of people, and they weren't really taking into account everything, and which is fine, which is, you know, I actually kind of like that. I like when they take Starfleet and make them a little bit more ambiguous, you know, because...
I just wanted to... I guess I would bring up the question. Did you notice how much... They name drop Deep Space Nine quite a bit in this movie.
Yeah, they do. Yeah,
And you don't know about it yet, but what's going on in Deep Space Nine at this point perfectly sets up the Federation should be desperate for this planet.
Mm-hmm.
And that would make a lot more sense, but it doesn't come across that way. They kind of just play it like the movie's actually kind of funny if you compare when they came out against what was going on in Deep Space Nine. It feels very much like the crew of the Enterprise really has no idea what's sort of going on in the world. That's kind of a problem. Like I would totally agree with you. I think the movie could be strengthened by Starfleet doesn't have to be doing this out of like totally hostile reasons or whatever. There is a good in-universe reason why this healing rejuvenation planet would be helpful at this point.
Yeah. Well, that would be beneficial. Yeah.
I mean, they don't get into it or anything like that. I feel like the stakes aren't clear enough in this movie for me to believe that it's that like the plot goes all the way through. And I don't feel that the stakes that they set out for me and the characters and the villains that I'm supposed to be playing against, even as far as the Sona, don't make a lot of sense. You mentioned that they're a little upset for being exiled from their planet. It feels like I don't really understand why they can't just bring up the fact that they want to go back. It seems like 100 years would be a lot to sort of forgive this old grudge. And these people seem pretty reasonable, you know, on the planet.
When I said that the stakes are clear, I guess I was thinking more in terms of, you know, the immediate stakes of the Sona are trying to get X and Picard is trying to stop them from getting, you know, the smaller, you know, that stuff is fairly clear. Like Salieri's motivation there is fairly clear until you get into his backstory. I think connecting them is kind of unnecessary. I don't think the Sona. The Sona and the Baku.
Oh, the Baku.
What are they called?
Okay, the Baku. The Baku, yeah.
The connecting them, I think, is a little bit unnecessary. Because, I don't know. It's I guess it works for, to play out the redemption aspect of that one guy, who wants to come back into the because he's the, but he's like the only one who wants to do that. It's not like,
yeah,
like, I think it would be a little bit more, I don't know. It would be a little bit more interesting to me if that still played out. And then the Baku just accepted them onto the planet. And, you know, because the whole argument here, or the whole dispute here, is that the Sona, at least the way that they set it up, seem to be a race that is, or a group of people anyway, that have cosmetic surgeried themselves into oblivion. And they see this planet as a way to maintain their youth without having to, by being able to go past the threshold that they've reached because they can't do it anymore.
Right. Yep.
And that kind of selfishness, I think, works on its own. I don't think it necessarily needs to be tied to, them being exiled from the planet.
Yeah.
Or at least I think, so what was missing for me about that whole thing is, the exile came after, Salieri and his buddies there were going against the Baku's rejection of technology and space travel.
Yes.
And they don't really, do they really get into why they rejected that stuff? I can't really remember.
No, they just say that they found it's better to sort of like live off the land. They have something when Picard first shows up on the planet. It's a typical like Luddite type thing. Like, we gave up on technology because it's better to live in the moment or whatever.
I wish that they had had some sort of more of a conflict around that concept, because I feel like that could have been kind of an interesting thing to hash out, is which one of these view. It's like, you know, it's like an Amish person who leaves for Rumspringa and then comes back and has an argument with his father about why New York is cool.
Right.
Or whatever. You know what I mean? Or why cars are neat. Not to, minimize that stuff, but, but I'm gonna, so strap in. No, but you know what I mean? Like, there was no, that was the catalyst for the exile, but there was never any discussion over it. Like, why was that? What did they do that was so bad that they were exiled off the planet?
Right. You know? And like, it was only 100 years ago. It's not like they were a different people or something. They're all literally the same people who live on the planet right now. So it's the same. I think it just ties into my, everything sort of feels like it's just happening because it kind of needs to happen. Like you mentioned about the Sona who flips and helps Picard. Has there ever been an easier convincing a bad guy to help the good guys scene in a movie?
Yeah, he was just kind of like reading the numbers of the pages in the script, and when it got to the one with the circle on it, he realized he had to change sides.
It just feels very very small. And you mentioned you liked Ruafo, who is the F. Murray Abraham lead character. I sort of do too. I feel like that the villain motivation here is interesting, and I think that he plays him well, but I'm not sure that it really, for all the reasons that you mentioned, really holds together. What made you like him? Did you like the performance, or did you just like the fact that he wasn't a Klingon and he wasn't Khan?
Yeah, I like the actor. I think he's a great actor. I liked his performance, except for that weird scream he gives, like he stubs his toe really hard after they find out they're on the holodeck. That was really strange.
Made Amy laugh, actually. She came in from the other room and said, "What the hell is going on?"
And yeah, I mean, I like the character. I liked him up until, you know, the last maybe 10 minutes of it, or 15 minutes when they kind of do the reveal on you. I liked that he was a different character that was, he was a different villain for the movies anyway, that was interested and after something other than straight revenge, but then it ends up kind of being revenge.
Yeah.
and after, you know, just a little bit different than the stuff that they've given you before. And he was different. I feel like these movies end up going one of two ways for whatever reason. They're either kind of a retread of Khan, or there's something completely different and completely out there that doesn't really work.
Yeah.
And I feel like he's kind of straddles the line pretty well, where he's a different kind of character from the ones you've seen before, more or less, at least, you know, until the end.
Yeah.
And his motivation is something that's a little bit different than just going after like a weapon or something. It's something a little bit more personal, that has a further reaching consequences, theoretically anyway, whether or not they actually play out in a way that makes sense. But the way that they present it is that there's, you know, he has his personal reasons, but then there's also larger implications of the thing that he's doing. So I just thought he was a little bit, as far as villains go for these movies, he was kind of a breath of fresh air for me a little bit.
Yeah.
Because even in First Contact, as much as I love First Contact, the Borg don't really have that much of a motive. Like, the Borg Queen doesn't really have a motivation in that movie. You know, it's the only thing they're there to do is stop First Contact or take over the, but it's like really nebulous either way, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Right.
And I don't necessarily think it's a negative, cause I think it's fine. I think it works out. It all plays out well, but, you know, there's no clear motivation for the villain in First Contact. Whereas here I was just refreshed at the character.
The script at least had a troubled time coming in. It's written by Michael Piller, who was the showrunner on TNG for a very long time. Came in the third season, largely responsible for turning the show in general into a character piece instead of sort of the sci-fi genre pieces that were the first and second seasons. He wrote this movie, had a lot of notes on it, and even though he's kind of credited with changing the series into a character-based thing, he's still relatively conservative and very interested in keeping the Roddenberry vision going with it. He thought that was very important. But I guess that originally the Sona were supposed to have become infertile because of not being on the planet.
Oh, I see.
And okay. So their motivation to get back is more about the need to continue their species as opposed to sort of the vanity of them looking funny.
Okay.
And that's why they have slave labor, because they can't man their own crew. They need to capture other people to make them work for them.
Yeah, I thought that wasn't super clear why they had like half of the Star Wars cantina on their ship.
Yeah, pulling their faces back and stuff like that. But so, I mean, it's that kind of a little thing. It's just weird that that's a detail you would cut, because it adds a lot to their storyline. So you think that it would actually be helpful to keep it in there. But yeah, I think that I think in general, I did want to talk about the tone of this movie. And I think that I'm much more negative on this movie, I think, than you are. And I think that the tone is a big reason why.
It's very jokey.
Very jokey. It's obviously made as a hangout movie, right? Like, yeah, they're like, let's have a really low stakes sort of hangout and sort of shoot the shit kind of a movie.
Honestly, I think that might be part of what I like about it, but go continue.
Well, I think my problem with it is that the shoot the shit movie actually seems to work better with the TOS crew. I feel that the TNG crew, when they start joking with each other here, I don't think that any part of the series or previous movies has ever made this kind of relationship the norm among the crew members.
That's fair. Yeah, that's fair.
And it really comes across as weird, like Picard's, you know, people are, you know, underlings to Picard, who's a very, you know, sort of rigorous Starfleet captain. Like, he's not Kirk. He's not jocular like Kirk.
Right.
He's very sort of laughy and jokey with everybody, and it feels off to me. And I think that's the big difference between why the TOS movies seem to work a lot better than the TNG movies so far. And I think it comes down to just the basic buildup of the crew allows for that kind of interaction in the TOS movies, and the TNG movies that try to do it, which is really only this one so far, don't succeed that well.
Yeah, I think, excuse me, sorry. I think one of the problems you run into with these movies is there's so many characters. You know, you have to, it can't just be about Picard.
They tried to split them again to much less success, I think. Yeah,
yeah, and everybody kind of needs something to do. And when they can't be involved in the plot because for some reason all these movies just end up being about Picard and Data for some reason. There's kind of the only thing left to do is to kind of just have shoot the shit scenes.
Yeah,
right. At least until they need to fire a gun at somebody. And, you know, I was thinking about that too. I think I like it because it's, I think this hit that, this movie hit that pocket where I just enjoy seeing the characters. And I agree with you. I feel like the relationships aren't entirely true to the way that they have been. But, you know, I enjoyed most of the interactions. Some of the jokes felt a little bit too forced. I liked the Riker and Troy stuff.
Yeah.
I
like it. I don't understand why it's in the movie, sort of. Like, don't they start acting that way before they get to the planet?
Yes. I think the stuff where she's, like, rubbing his neck is before they get to the planet. Yeah. Maybe not.
I think it is. Anyway. I think that's the only scene. But, yeah, the hormone thing would make sense. If you're all becoming younger, their relationship rekindling makes sense to me. But I feel like the movie's implying that this is all happening before. And I'm fine with that, but it just felt a little bit odd that it's come springing up out of nowhere all of a sudden.
Yeah, I feel like one of the big missed opportunities for me is they don't, they have this, the effects of this planet affecting everybody, and you get to see everybody be affected by it. But you don't really get to see a believable starting point, like a pre-affection point. Because I was thinking about that. I was thinking, I like these interactions. They're kind of fun and whatever. You get the weird thing where he's got to wear the thing on his head. That's funny.
Right. Yeah.
But then once they get into it and you find out that this planet is kind of like making them young again and making them more virile and strong. And, I was thinking, why don't they spend the beginning of the movie showing you how fucking run down they are?
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause that way when you get to the end where Riker has that line where he's like, are these feelings going to go away once we leave the planet? And, Geordi or Worf says something about you've always had a boner for her or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
it would mean a little bit more if you saw the state that they were in before that.
Yeah.
So it becomes a little bit of, they're getting this rejuvenation from the radiation from the planet, but they're also maybe, remembering what it is about, what it is they love about what they do, that kind of thing. You know what I mean?
That's why I think the most effective scene in the whole movie is Geordi gets his vision back and he looks at the sunset that's based off of, we know that character and we know previously, like he's had episodes where he got his vision. It was always taken away, but like he's always been blind and you understand why being on this planet and seeing the sunset is special for him, even though he knows he has to leave and go back to his sort of normal routine.
Yeah.
I thought that, and I think that's in line with what you're talking about. Like that one scene ties the characters to why they would consider the planet to be important in a way that no other scene or other character manages to get across.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Yeah. I think his change is something that, like you said, we appreciate because we know that change is something integral to the character that we already know up to that point. Whereas all of the other stuff, like we've never heard of Klingon puberty before.
Right. Yeah.
However, we do finally get a scene of Worf kicking ass, or I should say Worf kicking ass through the filter of Michael Dorn not knowing how to fight. Because, man, he looks like he's never thrown a punch in his life.
He swings his phaser rifle like a battle axe at that one point. I thought that was his most impressive move out of the entire thing.
But when that scene where he's on the bridge of the Sona ship and he fights off like four guys, I was like, man, that's what I wanted to see in First Contact, like him and the Batleth just like fucking up a bunch of Borg. But then while I was watching it, I was going, he is not super convincing doing this. And I wish Sean had never brought that up during the show, because now that's all I can think of anytime that he has like an action scene. And it's totally true. Michael Dorn is not a fighter.
Yeah, what's funny, Michael Dorn is not the fighter, but I think he's almost his comedy might be some of the best out of anyone.
Which, again, I found interesting because of that thing that I heard on Generations, where he was like, anything that makes Worf look silly, I don't want to do.
Yeah, that's what I...
Worf just pretty much looks silly in this movie.
Yeah, he does.
Much like the last one.
He's very effective at it. Like, he's very... you know, I think the scene where they start singing when they're chasing Data in the shuttlecraft is really stupid, but at least, like, he kind of... He elevates the material. On the other end of the spectrum is... Brent Spiner just continues to destroy and seemingly hate the character of Data in these movies.
Before we go to that, Worf for one more second. Why did the radiation make him sleep through his alarm?
Is that supposed to be a callback to teenagers not being able to get up?
I don't know. I have no idea. It's just such a really weird... I didn't know if it was a... If it was just on the surface, just completely supposed to be a thing where he's like... He's on the ship as opposed to Deep Space Nine, where time is different or something. I don't know.
Time goes
slower. You know, it's such a weird detail that they never expand upon.
Right.
It's like,
yeah.
It sort of falls in there in the stream of like the little hints of things changing, like Geordi kind of rubbing his temple and kind of stuff like that.
Yep.
So it seems like it's supposed to be related to the radiation, but I don't know why. I mean, I guess yeah, because he's supposed to be like a teenager.
Yeah,
teenagers like to sleep through stuff.
He seems to be reverting the hardest. That ties into my thing about the Picard chastising him for not showing up doesn't feel true to Picard. Like, I feel that's more of like, if this was a series, it would not have like a little joke about, oh, Deep Space Nine, we do things different. It would be more of a like, Mr. Worf, you're late kind of thing, which is maybe being too nitpicky, but it just ties into the sort of goofy jocularity. And when Worf wakes up, he bangs his head on the bed, right?
Yeah.
Yes. So it's like that. It's that kind of a joke and stuff like that. And I just don't particularly care for it. I mean, the Klingon puberty stuff, I think, works for they have the weird thing about his hair grows faster when they're younger or something.
It's very strange.
I mean, but they bring up the weird thing about, like, apparently Klingon puberty is supposed to be pretty intense, because Picard has that scene where he says, you know, once you start feeling emotional mood swings, like, let me know so you don't kill people, basically. Maybe this isn't in the movie for that, but at that point, don't bring up that line at all. If there's no danger to it, maybe just don't even bother mentioning that to me.
Yeah. I mean, I guess he could have just been making a joke.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but I don't know. But even still, if he was making a joke, then it seems kind of out of place still. But Data.
The cringiest lines that I've experienced through the TNG movies have all been Data lines. In Generations, when they blow up the ship, he gives the fist pump and he says, yes, or whatever. Mm-hmm. In First Contact, he says, I speak for the crew and I say, to hell with our orders, which always makes me cringe. This one, he's got a couple. He says he's a flotation device, and then
that was bad. That was R2-D2 has jets bad.
And then when he is picking up weapons, he says both saddle up and lock and load right after one another, which is, I would have gone with one or maybe none of those things for Data to say.
I wish if he had said yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker, it would have been a little bit better, I think.
I would have at least known that they'd given up and thrown in the towel at that point. Do you agree, or am I just being too hard on Data? The Data character feels to me like he's completely self-destructing through these movies, and I don't like... The way that he's being
actually literally, yes.
Yes, that's true. That's true. But I mean, he's not the character that we've known from the series. Like, he has these little moments of doing it. Usually when he's like analyzing a tricorder reading, he goes back into the character of being straight and everything. But
yep.
Outside of that, it's this goofy camera, like, camera's locked on him. It's like he's clearly gonna give a line. Like, here comes the line, he's gonna say something, and none of the lines are good. Like, they're all just obviously movie lines that are being said for kicks.
Yeah, I think a lot of that, the cringiness, would be dialed back if the lines were actually good. And it actually makes a lot less sense in this movie, because they go out of their way to mention that he left his emotion chip on the ship. Like it was his contact lenses. He left them on the ship.
Yep.
I didn't even know he could. I thought he couldn't take it out. Wasn't it like fused to his brain?
Yeah,
or something?
It was fused to him in Generations. And then in First Contact, he could turn it on and off. And this one, they're just like, you know what, fuck it. He doesn't have it anymore whatsoever.
Yeah. Well, see, I feel like I'm kind of disappointed they balked at that, because I think what they're doing with Data, if not entirely driven by the actor playing him, is probably at least partially driven by the actor playing him, in that you know, you got to do something with this fucking guy. He just can't be doing the same shit he's been doing through the shows. You know, you got to have some sort of, give him some sort of growth. And I think the emotion chip, though they don't end up doing anything really good with it, it could have, if they had just committed to, yes, fused to your brain now, you got to deal with it, that would have kind of made some of this stuff a little bit more easy to swallow, I think. And it would have, I don't know. Do you disagree with that?
So you mean that if he was stuck with this emotion chip, him being awkward would be a little bit more bearable, basically?
Or just like the stuff that they're doing with him, where they're specifically focusing on him in all of these movies, in his quest to be more human, and it's usually in ways that he's not expecting to have to deal with it. Like in Generations, he's overcome with all these feelings and he can't handle it.
Yeah.
In First Contact, you know, he's got the skin grafted to him where they're actually making him human and he can't handle it.
Yeah.
And this one, he's kind of learning how to deal with children a little bit.
Yeah,
and,
I think the general problem is I don't think there's a need for whatever. I don't even call this a Data story. Like, whatever Data's doing in this movie feels unnecessary to me.
And that's part of what I wonder. I wonder if that was part of, like, Brent Spiner didn't want to do it unless he had something to do, you know?
Yeah, right. It's his story. Basically, everyone's story in this movie feels so small that I don't understand why they focus any time on it, really. Mm-hmm. Like, the Picard romance is totally paint by the numbers, right?
Yeah. It also felt weird. I mean, it felt weird to me a little bit because in that first scene when they're getting ready to go to the banquet there.
Yeah, the banquet, yeah.
It seemed like he and Beverly were kind of all chummy.
Yes.
You know, like, I was like, oh, okay, they're back together. That's kind of cool. And then once he sees the hot old lady, he's all over that shit.
He's got a thing for old ladies. It feels very, like, I respect the fact in First Contact that they don't do that romance that was so obviously waiting for them to be pulled in with Lily and him. And here, it feels so, mostly because I don't really buy what Picard's doing in this movie a lot. Like, the insurrection feels too small. If you want to even call it an insurrection, I don't really think that's a good title for it. But him getting together with this woman is weird. Her ability... Can you explain her ability to slow time and why this is a part of the movie?
No, I was going to ask you about that. I have no idea why that's in there.
She does it twice.
Yeah.
It has no... The only reason it functions is to keep her alive for some reason. Picard apparently learns this ability.
And I don't know how it keeps her alive, because... How does slowing time, like, it doesn't, they do this time slowing thing and then all of a sudden Crusher's there, like, you know, giving her something, but
wouldn't Crusher be slowed down? Yeah.
Yeah. Wouldn't you want to speed time up?
Right.
Or something. I don't know. When they did it the first time, when they were over by the waterfall, I thought they just hadn't finished rendering the special effects or something. Because the waterfall just starts getting, like, really blurry and slow. And that's weird. They must have just missed that one. But it's just makes about as much sense as the money they spent on that little CGI creature the kid's carrying around.
It just feels to me like it's a holdover from, like, a theme that they had before or something. It's just the script here feels really sloppy to me in a way that – I can understand not being enthusiastic about what you're writing about, which is what Pillar seems to be in this situation, but at least make the script tight at that point. Like, you don't have to, this is not the most exciting movie. There's not a lot of moving parts here. Like, why is the scene of slowing time at all involved in any of this movie? And I think it just ties into the rest of the character stuff. Doesn't really, like, the Riker and Troy stuff doesn't go anywhere, really. Like, you have these scenes that don't amount to anything. There's no rising action. You have the Worf stuff, which is just a joke, which is fine. I'm okay with that. You have the Data scenes, which he talks to that kid, like, three or four scenes, and it all feels pointless. It doesn't say anything about the movie. It doesn't say anything about Data. It doesn't say anything about the kid's fear of technology, I don't think.
Yep.
It all feels like all the plot lines are just kind of slowly moving towards the finish line, and none of them are particularly the lead plot line, and none of them are particularly sidelined to any extent.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying this is an amazing movie. I enjoyed it while I was watching it. I think because with these movies at this point, I enjoy seeing the characters more than anything else. I feel like this felt like the show in a good way, whereas Generations felt like the show in a bad way.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, after coming off of First Contact, this movie's kind of a letdown.
See, well, would you... My SAT analogy here would be... the motion picture is to Generations as Insurrection is to Search for Spock. Would you agree with that?
Okay. Yeah. I don't think Generations and the motion picture are one to one, but I would agree with basically what you're saying. Yeah.
Okay. Because
I do have to say though, I think between this and Generations, the lesson that we've learned is if the movie involves the crew running around in the desert, it's not a good movie.
Yes. Yeah. I would think I would agree with that on this one. I'll get to that after I briefly explain what it meant if people aren't following me, that the motion picture and Generations are kind of the same to me in that they're failures that were trying, but they're failures mm-hmm. for different reasons. Like the motion picture is too expansive and Generations is not expansive enough.
Yeah.
But I think I'd prefer both of those movies to this and Search for Spock, because Insurrection and Search for Spock to me so far are the boring Star Trek movies.
That's fair. Yeah. I guess part of me it also feels like this movie does get such a bad rap.
You feel that I need to defend it a little bit?
A little bit. Yeah. Cause I don't think it's that bad. I don't think it's like, I think this is miles better than Star Trek V.
Okay, right. I think I would agree. Maybe not miles, but it is better than that, I think.
Yeah, and I don't know. I just don't see... I mean, I think whereas Generations feels like there are sections where you can go just like, this is flat out just bad.
Sure.
This movie doesn't have that. No, I feel like it's fine, really. You know, like it's like you said, a lot of it's kind of paint by numbers, and if you go outside the parameters of what they're saying, it doesn't make a ton of sense. But like, I don't know. I think it works for 90 minutes or 2 hours or whatever, and then it's just, you know, you kind of forget about it.
It's the shortest Star Trek movie. Did it feel that way to you?
Actually, no.
No.
Well, that's not true. There was a certain point where it seemed like they were ramping into the final climax, but it was only like halfway through the movie. So at first I was like, oh wow, this is actually, yeah, this is really short. But then I checked the time and saw there was another hour left, and I was like, oh geez, what the hell am I gonna do? I guess they're gonna shoot at flying droids for 25 minutes.
I think my general point would just be that I find the averageness of this, and I agree that it's not a terrible movie, like it's not a failure on a lot of levels. Mm-hmm. I find its thoroughly averageness to be offensive in a lot of ways. Like,
yeah.
Just if you're going to make a movie, this isn't the story to do this movie.
Yes. Yeah, like, I would agree.
Like, I just think it fundamentally fails there.
Or tell the story, but get into some of the more, you know, get into some
cinematic,
of the more details,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I think, you know, I've been thinking about it, and it's like, why am I having the response to this one and Generations a little bit more favorable than I probably should? And I think I just, for some reason in the movies, I find these guys very charming. And I think that goes a long way. In the show, I feel like they are a lot stiffer than they are in these movies. And mm-hmm. so I feel like the bad episodes of the show are not ever really saved by how charming the cast is.
Yes.
But I feel like in both of these movies, in Generations and in Insurrection, they are so comfortable and just sort of like having a good time that the failings of the movies are saved by how fun they are to watch, whether or not they are in line with the characters that they're supposed to be playing.
You know what I think would actually help me in a lot of regards, if they wanted to go with this tone and this sort of like interaction between the characters?
Joe Piscopo.
They should have split. The Enterprise crew should no longer be serving together at this point. And mm-hmm. that would be more believable if they were coming back as a group of friends, a lot like the TOS. I mean, it's kind of a ripoff of what TOS did, but I think there's a reason it works for TOS, is because
yeah.
once you drop that sort of direct rank relationship with each other, they can get a little bit looser around the collar and stuff. And I would believe that and be like, this is okay because they're friends. They're no longer really serving yeah. together. And it's okay to have this tone.
And like that shot at the end where, excuse me, where Picard and Riker, where whoever is on the whatever, says something commander or something captain, and both of them respond to it and kind of give each other a look.
Yes, right.
Like that would work a lot better if it was like, oh yeah, Riker's been the captain of the Reliant or some other ship for the past 5 years.
He hasn't been in command for 5 minutes, he's already confused about where he stands on the ship. Yeah, yeah, that would be a big change for me. So I read something interesting in a review. Actually, I wanted to get your thoughts about it. The idea is that the best Star Trek movies are the least like Star Trek, and the ones that are not as good are the most Star Trek-y of the movies.
Okay.
And I think I kind of agree with that at this point. I think what the author was trying to say is that when you can identify the movies as like Voyage Home is the comedy episode, Undiscovered Country is the military thriller, Two, Wrath of Khan is the revenge Ahab flick. When you try to describe Insurrection and Search for Spock and Final Frontier, they are the most like Star Trek episodes would be.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, and I think that's...
Search for Spock, maybe not, because Search for Spock is pretty... I feel like Search for Spock is just a big outlier.
Okay.
Because it's really... I mean, it's about them stealing a ship,
right? yeah,
and like it's they're all kind of they are kind of all spread out, and they got to steal a ship, and then it's like Spock's dead, and they got to bring him back from like that. I don't know if that feels. I guess the fight at the end kind of does. The fight at the end definitely feels like an episode of the show, but like I would agree with the other ones. I don't know if Search for Spock really feels like an episode of the show, but...
And I mean, Motion Picture would be the other one because it's literally a Star Trek episode that they turned into a movie and sort of made look different, but it is a Star Trek plot line. Like, you meet a probe that comes back and it's super evolved and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah, that's like the only plot line they had in the first season
right,
of the show.
Right, yeah, exactly.
So, you know, that's another thing, too. Not to just completely go off this, but Insurrection felt like... I think one of the reasons it felt like an episode of the show is because it had so many elements that they've done before.
Yes.
Just sort of like jumbled up a little bit.
Yep.
Because there's an episode where they do the thing where they're watching another species,
yep.
right?
Who watches the Watchers? Yep.
Yeah. Is that the one where they like almost, where they almost shoot Picard with a bow and arrow?
He does. Yeah. He does get shot with the bow and arrow. Yep.
And of course, they all have their sweet human alien clothes that, for some reason, all the human aliens that aren't part of Starfleet dress like they're from the safety dance video.
Yes, it's another one of the Star Trek loves to have the people basically doing backbreaking labor and having a good time with it when they could just live in this society with technology that provides everything they need and they don't need to toil in the fields under the hot sun, but they prefer to do it this way.
Yeah,
it's an interesting theme of Star Trek that runs over and over again about how.
Well, it's kind of. I was just gonna say it's kind of like in Star Wars how there's that underlying slave class of droids that nobody ever really talks about.
Right. You just torture droids and no one seems to think that it's a particularly bad thing to do to them.
Yeah,
I think that the. I don't really have a lot else to say about this. And I guess that we should talk about some technical details.
Well, just kind of stemming off of what you were saying before, why do you think that is? Why do you think that the ones that are the least like the show end up being the better movies?
I think it's because they're basically all inserting a genre onto the format of the show. And it elevates it into something that's worth being a movie. Mm-hmm. Where these smaller... episodes, like these smaller things, this would be a fine episode of the show. It would be like an average episode of Star Trek The Next Generation if this was the movie or this was the plot line that they chose to do. Mm-hmm. But the problem is just that it doesn't scale to what you would expect a movie to be about. Like it comes down to the ethics of, I don't think it's a bad idea to move 600 people to do what they're trying to do here. Picard sort of fighting back against Starfleet. Well, not really. It seems like he's fighting back more against this one admiral who doesn't really have an idea of what's going on in the first place. Yeah. And I think that just, you know, if your elevator pitch is it's Star Trek, except it's a military submarine thriller, you go, that's a movie right there.
Right, right.
Where you don't feel the same way about Insurrection and Motion Picture, and in my opinion, Search for Spock. And Final Frontier is a very much a Star Trek movie. You know, godlike creature and all that stuff.
Right, yeah. Yeah, this one is, you know, I feel like I was really on board with it for maybe like the first half of it. But, you know, I feel like they get to a point where they have the opportunity to start raising the stakes and start getting into some of the themes that they're playing with, and they don't take it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So, like, honestly, and this might be kind of cold, but kill some of these fucking people. Nobody dies in this movie. Right. Not a single one of those characters dies. And the entire thing is that they're on this planet where they live forever, or, you know, they live for an indeterminate amount of time. And, you know, there's nothing.
I actually wrote that down as a note, because once the Sona plans start to fall apart and they realize that Starfleet is going to be informed, I don't understand why they continue to save the people instead of just killing them and taking the stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. They don't ratchet it up. Once they find out that their transporter beam doesn't work, the answer is not, okay, I guess we'll just start killing them. The answer is, well, we have these small little droids that can shoot tags on them.
Yeah.
And like the response is, that's going to take for fucking ever. It's like, yeah, it is. And we're going to have to watch it. But like when it turns into Picard leading his people through Israel into the caves, you know, it's like, just start fucking killing somebody. Like, do something, because nobody's dying.
How does the woman not die in the cave-in, right?
Yeah, or something. I mean, she gets a fucking rock dropped on her. Yeah. 200 metric tons of rock. Like, there's no step up. And so when you get to the point where it's just like wandering through levels of a video game, basically, or just like wading your way to the end. I mean, even at the end, when Sona... where they have their obligatory blow up the ship and kill the bad guy thing. It's like, I don't even know. What the fuck are they doing? He's trying to activate the thing that's going to sap the power out of the thing? Is that what it is?
I think so. I think that thing is designed to suck the power out of it. It seems very convoluted what's going on.
But even there. It's like he's just trying to do what his initial plan was.
Yes.
It's not like he's moved the board, or, you know, moved the pieces on the board. He's just doing the same thing he was going to do anyway. Now it's just on a timetable is sped up.
Yeah, and I mean, like, it's funny that when I watch that too, the ending is funny because, you know, they go through this song and dance. It's not really set up very well, but they get them onto the holodeck ship, right? They kind of trick them and beam them on.
I like that. I like that bit. I thought that was good. I don't know if it was executed the best way, but I like the idea. I thought that was cool.
Yeah, I like the payoff. Like, it works well. Yeah. I don't think that it's executed particularly well because they're beamed onto that ship and the guy realizes it within like 5 seconds of what they've done. Like, there's not like they go through 10 minutes of the movie thinking that they're doing something and they're actually not doing anything.
Yeah.
And ultimately, it doesn't even matter because once they get on the ship, for some reason the ship still works and he can just beam himself to the other thing.
Yeah, you know, that didn't make a lot of sense.
What kind of prison ship is that? That you can just get off it whenever you want to. And I have the same. Also the shot of the ship, the Enterprise flying by the exploding thing as it's like chasing it up the explosion. Didn't feel particularly Star Trek-y. I don't know why they needed to get so close to it to do that.
Yeah.
That's a very, it's a Star Wars-y type thing, I think, to do.
Yeah, the last like climactic sequence of the movie did not feel, I mean, it didn't feel like Star Trek, but it also just felt really stock.
Yeah.
You know, it just felt like
go to the computer, get the totem out of it, and that'll blow up.
Yeah, it was basically like watching GoldenEye, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point. Oh, technical level, I guess we can talk about. I'm shocked this movie cost $60 million to make.
Apparently, they had like a shit ton of sets they had to build. I was just watching some of the special features, and they said they had to build 18 more sets than they did for First Contact, and they had to build 37 sets for First Contact.
Yeah, because the Baku town is apparently totally constructed for this.
Yeah.
And apparently it suffered weather damage in Los Angeles, which doesn't make a lot of sense. So that's like kind of a weird thing that would happen. But the like I feel maybe it's just the script here, but I feel like Frakes' direction is a big step down from First Contact. It might just be he's got something exciting in First Contact to work with.
Mm-hmm.
And here it's just a lot of people talking to each other. One review I read just mentioned that the movie is very Lucas-y, prequel-y, in that scenes will start with two people walking towards each other talking, and then the scene will end where it's like clearly the characters are just waiting for the scene to cut. You know what I mean? Like there's no naturalness to it. It's clearly just you have two characters walk and talk to each other, and then they're like, yeah, all right, that's the scene, and then it ends and it cuts to the next thing.
I don't know if I really noticed that, but yeah, that now I'm thinking about it, that does seem kind of right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a tough thing.
Yeah, it kind of goes to the you know, the material, you know, like you said, the material he has to work with. It's not horribly exciting. There's only so many ways you can shoot some people talking to each other, you know?
Right, and walking up a hill in a line and all that stuff.
Yeah, and I thought the special effects didn't look as good either.
This is the ships, first movie to all ships are CGI.
Yeah, I think it was a big step down.
Yeah.
yeah. Some of them look pretty good, like the hero shots of the Enterprise look pretty good.
Yep.
But like a lot of the shuttlecrafts and the bad guy ships and stuff, I didn't think looked super great. They all whereas First Contact, I was thinking myself, oh, I can't. I was really surprised that it had come out so early in the 90s. It was what, 96 or 94 or something. Yeah,
96,
like that?
I think.
96, because it looked so good. Whereas like usually in that period of like 94 through 90, well, 2000 really, well, 94 through about the Matrix. You know, CGI stuff had like a really weird kind of filmy, like, I don't know a good way to describe it, but it like felt it was like overly rendered, but it still felt really thin.
Yeah. Yep.
If that makes sense.
Yep.
And First Contact didn't really have that. It had it in a couple places, but this movie I felt like had it a lot.
Yeah, it's
especially those like drones, those drone things. Those things look terrible.
The analogy has been, CGI is kind of like plastic surgery. Like you want to be getting plastic surgery nowadays, not 20 years ago when it was coming out and getting big, because no one looked good when it was done. And it's the same with CGI now. They've gotten a lot better at it. It's just too obvious. At least use a model that's like enhanced by CGI or something.
Yeah.
And it's clear that these are not the ships that we're looking for, I suppose, or something like that. But
yeah, it was the period of time where it was getting so popular that they were like, oh shit, we can just do anything with this stuff.
Yeah.
And for some reason, it took them a long time to realize, well, we can do anything with it, but we shouldn't necessarily do anything with it. You know, like I think it's getting a lot better now because a lot of filmmakers are realizing that it's really better when it's an enhancer than it is a full frontal thing, unless you're doing like a Planet of the Apes movie. Wait, have you seen those movies? This movie is fucking great. Like, seriously, I was always the biggest, you know, anti full CGI character thing.
Yep.
But that, I haven't seen the newest one, but the last one, man, you forget very quickly that you're watching CGI apes because they are really, really good.
Yeah, that's the one that's on Earth, right? They break out of the laboratory. Is that the...
Yeah.
I saw that one. That one was very good. I think it's just it's probably something to do with the uncanny valley, right? Like, we recognize humans not looking good enough, but if it's a chimpanzee, we don't have enough experience with a chimpanzee.
They're getting good at it, man. Like, it's usually the eyes. It used to be the eyes.
Yeah.
You know, you could tell, like, they all had that dead eye thing. But that second Planet of the Apes movie, the very first shot is a close-up of the main ape's face, like, right in the eyes.
Yep.
And it's like throwing it in your face that they fixed it. They figured out how to do it.
You remember Final Fantasy, The Spirits Within? Do you remember that movie?
I never watched it, but I do remember
When that came out, people were just like, my God, it's the most lifelike thing. You were just looking at dead, soulless people on screen, and it's terrifying.
Yeah. Well, the thing, when Tron Legacy came out and they had that first scene, I don't know, did you see that movie?
No, I haven't.
Well, the first scene, it takes place like in the 80s with a young Jeff Bridges, and they shoot him from the back and everything, and so it works fine. But then they spin the camera around, and you see that they've like CGI made youthful Jeff Bridges, and it looks really fucking creepy.
Yeah.
But for some reason, they've kept at that technology, and now they're really good at it. Like in Guardians of the Galaxy 2, they have a sequence where they do the same thing to Kurt Russell. He looks amazing. He looks just like he did in like Escape from New York. It's unbelievable.
Well, what about?
I don't know who's paying for that technology. I guess maybe it's Tom Cruise wanting to work for the rest of his life and still play parts he's playing now. I don't know. But
what about CGI Leia in Rogue One?
It's impressive, but it's
not quite there.
Yeah, honestly, the weirdest one in that one is CGI Tarkin.
Yeah, Tarkin.
Which,
yeah.
Have you watched it yet?
I have not. But I know that that's the general sort of criticism is Tarkin doesn't look particularly good.
He looks well. That's unfair to say.
Okay.
He looks pretty good, but I think the uncanny valley thing gets jacked up to 11 because it's specifically another actor. Right. You know, like if it was just some creation, I think it would be fine. But since it's specifically Peter Cushing, it's really weird.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah.
sorry to go off on a face CGI tangent.
No, we're looking forward to it. We have to do the Rogue One podcast at some point. But I think we're done with Insurrection. Where would you sort of notch this one in? I'm sure you've lost track of where you rank all the movies against each other. But would you put this one? Where would you group this with another movie if you don't know exactly in the hierarchy where it belongs?
Well, I had started thinking about them specifically Next Generation movies, and this would be, we've only done three, but this would be number two behind
yeah.
First Contact. In the grand scheme of things, I would probably, for just the sake of doing it very quickly, I would probably break them all down into like three sections,
sure.
Like an A section, a B section, a C section.
Yep.
This would probably be for me, I guess probably top C, like high C.
Oh, I was going to say low B tier, but if you're going to go high C, so what other movies are in the C tier for you? You have Final Frontier and
Final Frontier, Search for Spock, probably Generations. Yeah, I mean, that's the weird thing with some of these movies is, like, I can totally admit that they are not the best that the franchise has to offer, but some of them I do just enjoy watching.
Yeah.
And Generations falls into that, but I would not say Generations is a particularly great movie.
Yeah, they're very meditative. Like, they're just kind of, I think I mentioned it before in the podcast, but they're just kind of background movies. Like, they're fine in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mine would be... I would probably plug it in just after Generations, so it'd be like the from better to worse would be Motion Picture Generations, Insurrection, Final Frontier, Search for Spock. So it's in the bottom three for me.
Doesn't
inspire me.
This is number nine, right?
This is the ninth movie. Yeah. So
I guess we could break them into three sections.
We could, and I ended up in the top of the C tier, so we're exactly the same spot for each other.
Yeah,
which is funny, although we had different perspectives on the movie.
Yeah, I think if I had to do it on the fly, I would say the A tier is hello Pliskin. First Contact, in no particular order. First Contact, Wrath of Khan, Voyage Home.
Yeah, that's my top three.
Yeah, B section is probably Undiscovered Country. Undiscovered Country. I would probably put Motion Picture in the B tier.
Yep, that's the same that I have it.
Yeah, Undiscovered Country, Motion Picture, and probably Search for Spock. Am I forgetting one? What's the?
You've left out Final Frontier. No, you said Search for Spock, Final Frontier, and Insurrection were your bottom three. So you'd have. I think you just added Generations into that bottom. You'd have Generations as a low B, I think.
Yeah, do I like Generations more than I like Search for Spock, or do I dislike it less than I like? I don't know. That's a tough one. I would feel like that would be the overlap. Would be Generations and Search for Spock would be in flux in the B and C category.
Yeah, I mine is higher just because I enjoy watching the TNG cast. Like, if I have to watch two bad movies, I would rather watch the TNG cast, sort of in a weird way. Even though I just generally just got over saying that the TOS cast makes better movies, I would rather watch a TNG movie, a bad TNG movie than a bad TOS movie.
Oh, I am, I don't know if anybody's been keeping track, because I know I haven't, but I'm sure that my views on all of these things are completely inconsistent. And there's no, like, from podcast to podcast, or even within the body of a single podcast, that seems to go all over the place.
I think we're being pretty good. I've got my list. I don't think you've deviated too much. I think it's more important just knowing which ones are the top ones and which ones are the bottom ones. Those are, like, obvious.
I mean, I recognize the frustration one would feel. From listening to me say, you know, I actually really enjoyed this movie, but I would give it like bottom three.
I think it just ties into what we were saying. They're all not that far apart from each other. It's just how you place them. Yeah, that's
yeah.
There's nothing brutally wrong with Insurrection. It's just not a very exciting movie to me. It has some plot holes. It has character things that I could work on, but. You know, it's not that bad. We didn't even mention the score, which is interesting.
Better than Generations. They actually, I it's funny because I was listening to it and I was thinking, you know, this doesn't sound like Jerry Goldsmith, but it's pretty good.
It is Goldsmith.
Oh, it is?
It is, yeah.
Oh, I thought it, because I looked at it quickly. They had some, the song that, that mambo song that Picard dances to for half a second was in the musical credits as written by Alan Silvestri, who is the guy who did the music for Back to the Future and a bunch of other really great scores. So I just assumed, I didn't see the name in the opening credits, so I just assumed that he had done the entire movie.
I think
so, but it was Jerry Goldsmith.
I think he's at an age at this point where he is not. He's the main name, but he's not doing all the work on it. I think.
Oh yeah, that would make sense.
His son was involved, I know, at this point, and working with his father. So I think a lot of it might be his. I didn't find it to be the most memorable, but I didn't find it as forgettable as Generations would be the way to describe it.
Yeah, it's definitely not as good as the best stuff, but it's definitely not a stock kind of score. Like it has a little bit of character to it, which is nice.
Yep. Well, I think that's it for Insurrection. I think we're done talking about this guy. We're almost done with the Star Trek movies, Clay. At this point, we only have one more to do, and it's Nemesis.
Then what?
Then we go watch every single F. Murray Abraham
fan
movie.
Films. Oh man, I would do a podcast about Amadeus in a heartbeat. It was fucking great.
I'll throw it up on the Patreon poll.
And Last Action Hero, which he's great in that movie too, and he's in it for 30 seconds.
Oh yeah, that's right. Well guys, thank you very much for listening.
How do you get to Carnegie Hall? Practice.
Practice. If you guys enjoyed the content today, you're on YouTube, like in the comments, appreciate it. If you're on iTunes, you can rate us there. Rate us on all the podcatchers, helps get the show out there. Much appreciated. Facebook.com/thepenskypodcast. And last but not least, patreon.com/thepenskyfile. You go there, support the show, a couple dollars a month, you get extra content. We talk about a whole bunch of stuff, not all Star Trek related, but we do podcasts about Mad Men. We do stuff about, the hell else did we do? We did Event Horizon. We've done other things that are coming up.
RoboCop 1, 2, and 3.
Yep, all that stuff.
Total Recall.
So if you guys are interested, it's a great way to support the show. You can go there. You get access to all that stuff for only a couple dollars a month. And you can join the conversation over there. It's a very, very good place to be. But anyway, Clay, we're done with Insurrection. Moving on to Nemesis. What are your thoughts so far? Where's your mental standing at this point? I'm getting a little worn out by the Star Trek movies.
Yeah, I think this one and Generations, I think all of the TNG ones have kind of worn me, not worn me out, but worn me down, where I think it's like they're just sort of, like, I feel like they're as we talk about them, I find more things that I don't like about them, but as I'm watching them, it doesn't really come up, just because, I don't know, it's just like, I feel like it's just, it's such well-worn, familiar characters and territory that it doesn't really shock me too much.
Yeah.
You know, whereas when we watched the TOS stuff, it was like I hadn't watched those in a long time, and so it was a little bit fresher.
Yeah.
But these characters are, you know, we had done the, I'm sure you get it more than I do, but we'd watched the entire series and, you know, all this kind of stuff. So it feels like they're, I don't know. I don't really know.
I think that The TNG movies have sort of fallen in my esteem. I used to, before this sort of rewatch where I was watching it with like a really critical eye, I probably would have been in the same position you are now. It's like, yeah, it's fine. Like people are a little too harsh on the movies maybe. But I think if you're like just sort of really like paying attention to them and sort of comparing them to the other movies that came before, they really aren't that good. It's kind of like sad in a way that the TNG movies mm-hmm. are where they stand. And there's really only one good movie out of the four of them.
You know, I wonder if it's has something to do with the fact that there is so much less of the TOS stuff than there is the TNG stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
So kind of like they had to hit it. You know, when they came up to bat, they had to swing for the fence.
Yeah.
As opposed to TNG, it's 7 seasons and 4 movies. It's like, you know, how much, what is there left to do with these guys right, other than like have them start like killing each other?
Right. And
I was going to ask you, maybe we should save this till the end of when we finish the movies, but something to think about, unless we've actually talked about it before and I forgot. Do you think that TNG has an easier time, or do you think they have a harder time with their movies because they have so many more fleshed out characters than TOS does?
Yeah, I mean, I think that this would probably be a good discussion to wrap up the movies with.
I was thinking.
So let's save that for Nemesis, because Nemesis is going to change some stuff, and then we'll go from there. Because it is something now that I'm thinking, I'm tending to think about the bigger sort of problems more than the actual problems with the movies at this point when mm-hmm. I'm watching them. Like, why is this not working as well? And so I think that'll be a good way to wrap it up. So you guys can look forward to that. But Clay, thanks very much for coming on.
Oh, thanks for having me. I look forward to the next one where Captain Picard fights his son, Bane.
Yes, his son, Bane. And I've been waiting 10 weeks to come up with the one point that I don't think I've ever heard anyone bring up about Nemesis, and I don't understand why, so you guys can look forward to that. It'll be the first thing that I say when we start with the Nemesis podcast. Anyway, guys, thank you very much.
Why does he wear the mask?
Do you feel powerful? Does he say you feel powerful or do you feel in control? What is that quote?
I think he says, do you feel in control?
Do you feel in control?
Guys, this gives you power over me.
We will get back to it. Star Trek Insurrection, we're done. See you next week.